What's up, what's up, what's up, friends, family, and fans? Welcome to life. Y'all know this is where we listen and inspire friends.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. We have our esteemed friend, brother, and colleague, Mr. Leslie Brathwaite, mix engineer extraordinaire. So back to what I was saying.
So don't take the story and go, oh, I'm a mix now. Said, I got to stop recording so I can mix. You also got to be good at mixing.
No, not that.
Because here's the thing. Yes. Madonna was the one that made the distinction that she wanted me. Back to what I was saying.
At what point, because I mean, every engineer tries to have their sound. But there's certain tips and tricks that you guys share with the up-and-comers that are a part of your kit that kind of designates that this is your sound.
I think
when
for
did you
me,
know you had yours?
For me, my sound is whatever the artist wants. Mm. I've always been in that mind frame of service. I've always had a very servant-driven...
So you don't come in and give... you don't make them accept Leslie's style. Leslie becomes whatever...
I always want to know, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to accomplish?
What was that like with someone like a Bjork?
Yeah.
You know, Bjork.
I mean, because
seriously,
Bjork's
a little eccentric.
No. We went to the south of France, and she had this big old castle, and she's little. She's super short. She's about a little taller than this table. She's dumb short. And so everything in her house was huge. She had like ladders in the kitchen everywhere. It was the funniest little thing.
Ladders.
It was so funny.
She lived in a castle.
Yes. And she would use weird words. Like she was like, oh my God, this makes me feel so greasy. Oh my God.
What?
Like, what? Like, I would have to say she is the weirdest and also the sweetest person I've ever met. She's super weird. Like, but it was fun. It was just weird. But the Bjork thing was more tied into Dallas.
Okay.
I was more so just who he was rocking with at the time. So it wasn't that she came looking for me. She was really looking for Dallas. She wanted his sound. So I was a part of that. The same thing with Mike.
Okay.
Yeah. Same thing with the Michael thing where Michael wanted Dallas to produce these few records on his thing. So I came along as a part of his sound.
So you end up you really mixed Dallas's sound.
Yeah. So it was bring the engineer, whoever did the rough mixes on these roughs that you sent me, bring that engineer.
Gotcha.
Same thing with Bjork, same thing with Michael. So that's my involvement was more about me being attached to him.
Okay. So what was it like working with Beyonce out in the UK?
Ah, that was fun. That was that trip was fun for so many reasons.
Now obviously if y'all haven't caught on now, we done come up.
Yeah, oh yeah. So
we done came up.
We're here.
So y'all got
all the jump around.
Yeah, you got all the little things that got them here. So now
we're gonna jump around because there's one story I want to tell about Madonna that's part of the come up.
Absolutely.
But yeah, working with B in the UK was really fun. The thing about that was super fun is that was the first. I had worked with her before. I'd mixed which song did I mix on her first album? I think I mixed Baby Boy. I mixed that, and I mixed
the fact that you get to the point of your career that you forget the hits you
right. See, let's see, was it say put a ring on it or?
I mix so many records daily. It's crazy. So I've mixed records for her throughout her career. I mixed Destiny's Child records.
Right.
I met them when they were the Dolls. We signed to Daryl.
That is where we first met.
Yes.
When we had the Dolls meeting. Remember? Yes. And Daryl Simmons invited everyone
everybody.
To.
Yes.
That's where we first met. Because I remember hearing your name. Yes. I was just came out of New Mood, if you will. Remember hearing your name.
You were at Sony at the time, right?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Not yet. We were at that time we were recording Bivins, Michael Bivins.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so, but my manager at the time was telling me I need to write more. And so I forgot how I heard
and
about Biv the
was always around Kev, K. Wells.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So actually, Renee McNeil and Latan, they were at LaFace, but they told me about the meeting, I believe. Yeah. So I went to the meeting and I remember somebody was saying something, someone mentioned your name. And I said, oh, that's Leslie. Because I would hear your name when we go from a studio to studio.
They would always be next door at Darryl's.
What happened was, it would always happen. We would go to a studio right when Boys and Men would leave. Mm-hmm. And finally we crossed paths at one point. But I would always hear your name. But that's where Daryl Simmons had the Dolls meeting. And we were talking about where we wanted to go. And they said something about Leslie. I was like, oh, that's Leslie.
Yes, so I met them. I met them when they were that young. Yep. So I always knew her, worked with her, mixed certain songs. But the Everything Is Love album, Guru called me and said, hey, man, we're working on this project, super secret. of course, you know who it involves if I say it's super secret, but we need you on a plane ASAP. I was like, Guru, you ain't got to say nothing. What's the budget? Let's go. Da da da. That evening, I flew out to London. So I get there, and then Guru lays it out. So when I land, I meet Marielle, who is her assistant at the time.
And for people who don't know, I'm sorry, Guru is another amazing.
Yes, Guru is Jay-Z's engineer. Yeah. Records and mixes most of Jay-Z stuff. Okay. Really good friend. Been knowing him for years. Met him when he was a Howard. You know, all this stuff. So I get there and meet Marielle, and then I'm getting in a I get shuttled over to a private airport, and I get on a helicopter and all this stuff, and then I get on and I'm like, oh,
they put the bag over your head, like, what is happening right now?
I'm like, oh, and then, you know,
he's like, oh, my name is Leslie A.
Yeah, so it's like it's all these little moments where I'm just like, I didn't know what I was getting into, and then kind of got it explained. Mario was like, no, they're doing an album together, and I was like, oh, that's dope. Oh, okay, I'm a part of this. And then, but again, what was really, there's many stories in there. Like, we, you know, we're in a helicopter. We landed on Adele's front yard, and I didn't know whose house we were at. And there were snipers and, like, you know, all that kind of, it was all this kind of stuff. So I was like, what is happening?
So Adele is a drug kingpin is what you're telling us.
Facts. Like, what is this? And then I met Megan Harry. And it's funny because when I met her, all she wanted to talk about was Cardi B. Because the way I was introduced was, oh, this is my engineer. He's mixing some stuff and he works with Cardi B.
And man, we skipped that whole window.
She was like, tell me about Cardi B. She grabbed my arm and sat me down at the kitchen table and was like, tell me everything. I love her.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, you're like royalty at the time. She was royalty. I was like, oh, you want to know about Cardi B? Okay, cool.
You know. Did you meet Prince Harry too?
Yeah. He was there. Nice. I met him, but I mean, was she his wife at the time?
I think she was his fiance.
She was his fiance at the time. She took up all my time. She sat me down and was like, Cardi B, tell me everything. And then she started asking about my career.
Did you do the whole thing? You just text Cardi, say, hey, somebody wants to, did you pull that
card? No.
No one went not to. I got you.
Yeah, texting Cardi never really goes like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's going to be a very ratchet conversation.
Gotcha.
Cardi is the person you don't answer on speakerphone.
Don't put on speakerphone.
It's a shame. I'm like that to some friends.
You don't answer her horrible on speakerphone. Like, you don't know what's
going on. That is funny.
So, but again, getting back to what was really cool about that experience and that trip is working with my friends, with Guru and Stewart and Tony Maserati. That was such a cool thing. And what was super cool about it is no egos. We all checked our egos. And we were mixing on each other's stuff.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so, essentially, and Guru will tell you the same thing. He actually just hopped on a live I was doing the other night on Instagram. He was telling the story from his perspective. But what was interesting about it is none of us really have a credit as mixing an entire song by ourselves. We all contributed. So, like, I'd be mixing Friends, and then Guru will be like, oh, I'll be like, Tony, come touch her vocals on this bridge just to, you know, to kind of get the edge that she's looking for. And then Tony will be like, well, go touch the 808s on my song. And then Guru will be like, well, you do the drums on this one, and then let me do Jay's vocals
that's
on this one.
So
and
dope.
So we worked like a
y'all
team.
Y'all worked like
that's
producers so as engineers.
We worked like
amazing
a team.
What can happen when there's
so
no
dope
ego in
yeah,
the room.
It was yeah, so we had so much fun on that trip, and we all worked together and no egos, and we got it done. And we only had a week to do it. We had a week to mix the whole album. Because she wanted to, she times her stuff where she doesn't want any leaks. So she tries to play it to the numbers.
Yeah.
Like, and it was so much fun working with those dudes. And we talk about it all the time. Like, we got a group chat that we'd be in and we'd be talking about, you know, one day a cat ran in the studio and we were like, where'd the cat come from? And so we have all these little stories and, you know.
Question about Tony. Does Tony use his plugins as much as some people think he does?
You know, it's funny. I remember we had a joke about that. We was kind of like, me and Guru was like, oh, I mean, none of us have our own signature plugin. So, I mean, you know, I'm going to use the Tony Maserati reverb right here. So we would always be messing with him. But you know what? I don't know. I don't know that he uses a lot of his own plugins. He probably does. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to ask
him. I was like, when you walked in, did you ever
I'm going to ask him. Yeah. I don't know. But we always mess with him.
I mean, I love
that.
His stuff, by the way.
His job keeps his kids off of iPhone. Right, we won't go there.
So Madonna.
Yeah. Oh, so the Madonna come up story. Are we there?
Let's get to Madonna.
So we're skipping back. So let's skip back in time. So after a well-known female artist, this is kind of after that. So at this point, I'm Dallas's recording engineer. Like, I'm
officially
his engineer. I'm recording all the projects with him, from Deborah Cox to whoever. Mm-hmm. So I'm his guy. We're recording. So he gets the call to do Madonna. And, you know, I get a little excited. I'm like, oh, we're about to be recording Madonna. This is amazing. Now, we had just finished recording Monica. So Monica's album was in the bag, ready to go. Clive Davis was having Dave Way and all these other engineers mix the first single, Don't Take It Personal, which I ended up mixing, which ties into the story. But so they're getting the song mixed at this time. So I'm just collecting all the stuff and getting ready to work on Madonna. Then Alvin, God rest his soul, and this is not a bad story. It's not a negative story towards Alvin, because this is not the point of the story. But Alvin, who was Dallas's main mixer at the time, he wanted to work with Madonna. He wanted to be the one recording Madonna because he really liked Madonna. So he was like, I want to record this particular session because I will get the proximity. Because as a mixer, you don't really have that much proximity with the artist.
Right.
Not as much as the recording engineer.
Right.
So Alvin kind of finagled it and bumped me off the sessions. And it was like, Alvin was like recording Madonna. Now here's the key that I know Stone listens for the gems and the keys and all that. I was not bitter about it. I was like, cool. It's part of it. I felt a little some kind of way. I'm human. I felt a little some kind of way. I was kind of like, damn, I'm looking forward to working with Madonna. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Alvin has seniority. I haven't been with Dallas for years. And I get it. I get that you put your big dogs on the big clients. She was really huge at the time. I mean, she's still considered to be huge in our minds.
Sure.
But so I wasn't bitter about it. I was a little kind of like, but I was not bitter. So, okay, cool. So Alvin's recording Madonna now. So what am I going to do? All right, well, I'm going to go in the C-room. I told Dallas, well, I'll just be in the C-room every day, and I'll just try to get these rough mixes for Monica sounding good while y'all work with Madonna.
I work on the other M.
Yeah, I was a little salty. So what ended up happening was, so Madonna came. They recorded. She had a great relationship with Alvin. They were kicking in. Then every day, so one day she came into my room, and I'm mixing Don't Take It Personal. I'm sitting there mixing, messing with Don't Take It Personal, getting it right, trying to get the rough mixes right, da da da. And this is an important distinction to remember. She came in the room, she saw me mixing. So she walks in, and she was like, hey, who are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Leslie. I'm one of Dallas's recording engineers, da da da. But we just finished doing Monica. I'm just getting these mixes, you know, together, just trying to get her sounding right. So when they mix it, da da da. And she was like, oh, you're Leslie. She was like, yeah, Dallas told me you're the one that did the rough mixes, you know, when he sent the songs. I was like, yeah, da da da. So we start talking. So the next day she comes in my room. She comes in with her food. She sits there and she eats. And I'm just sitting there working. And she's like, don't mind me. I just need a quiet place.
I'm not going to mind you, Madonna.
Yeah. She's like, don't mind me. I just need a room. And what I realized, what my room became for her was the place where nobody was trying to get at her.
Right.
She was like, this is where I'll come eat my lunch. Mm-hmm. Right. This is where I'll come do my little notes or whatever. Because she knows I'm going to just keep working. And every now and then if she talks to me, I'm going to talk to her. So it became my little thing. She would come in the room every day around when she's ready to eat her lunch. So fast forward, she goes back to L.A. And I'm in the room with Dallas one day. And Alvin mixes the first couple records and they send her the mixes. So Madonna goes, yeah, Dallas, there's something about these mixes. They're just not translating the way I thought. Maybe I need to come back out there, da da da. And then Dallas was like, okay, well, we'll figure it out. And, you know, maybe you and Alvin can talk and figure out da da da. She was like, Alvin? She was like, Alvin can't mix my records. Is Alvin mixing the records? And all of us kind of made this face like, what? Why is she saying that? And then the light bulb went off. And she was like, yeah, he can't mix my records. He's my recording engineer. She was like, what about Leslie? I thought Leslie was mixing the records. And Dallas was like, no, Leslie is, you know, working with Monica. Da, da. She was like, yeah, he ended up mixing the Monica single. Right now, at this point, I had ended up mixing the Monica single. And it was solidified that I was going to mix the single because Clive got tired of sending the record all around and was like, why don't we just use Leslie's mix? So Dallas was able to answer that question honestly and accurately by saying, yeah, he is mixing Don't Take, he is the mixer on Don't Take It Personal, because that's the song she kept hearing me work on. So she was like, yeah, Leslie. And he's the one that did the rough mixes that you sent to me, right? When I first heard these songs. She was like, yeah, those were more aggressive. Those were raw. She was like, we should get Leslie to mix those. In fact, why don't you send Leslie out here if that's okay with you? So right then, the light bulb went off in my head that a lot of artists didn't like mixing they didn't like their food to touch. Yeah. If you're a recording engineer, yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah.
If you're a mix engineer, and you got to remember, she only saw me mixing. She never saw me recording.
Right.
In her whole time when she was sneaking in my room, I'm mixing Monica, messing around with Monica. So she, in her brain, it got ingrained that, oh, he's a mixer. And in her brain, it got ingrained that Alvin was a recording engineer. So that was my come up to mixing. That was the thing that catapulted me into mixing. Because then she flies.
So now you went from recording engineer to mixing engineer.
And that was the thing that let me know, you know what? I got to stop recording if I want to be taken seriously as a mixer. Because everybody who keeps seeing me as a recording engineer.
You know what? Now I've been in this game.
He told you this is going to be the gym.
Almost 25 years. And like Drew Castro, shout out to Drew. I used to love tracking with Drew. His dude was so freaking fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even funny. And then you had your rough mix when you were done recording.
Right.
And then back in the day, I would track with you. But then when you went to mixing, no, I'd never tracked with you. Who am I thinking of? I think I'm thinking of Corey. Corey and what's the other guy that used to be at he used to be at Dallas. Now he... And then he engineered for Cristal for a while. White guys, you would know him if I said it.
Pratt?
No.
Or Carlton?
Carlton.
Okay.
Carlton tracked for a while. Yeah. And I tracked with Carlton. But these people, when I'm writing somewhere, I'll go back to them and say, oh, no, I mix now. And I'm like, all right, you still know how to track? Like, I'm going to pay you to track.
They would never.
Now I was like, all of a sudden, now that they started mixing, they don't touch tracking anymore.
That's why they got that from me.
You have answered an age-old query for me. I never understood.
It ain't that they got rich and switch. It ain't that they were acting bougie. They just realized that in certain people's minds, in order to be taken seriously as a mixer, you got to stop.
Thank you for answering that. And now I can stop side-eyeing people.
That's the secret sauce to all of us.
No, I didn't know that. And we do good. Pat on our backs. We do great topics because he touched on two episodes.
Yeah.
One... manipulation, because that's exactly what I almost hate to say it. Rest his soul. That's exactly what Uncle Al did. Yeah, but that wasn't initiative. He manipulated,
absolutely.
And look what it did.
Mm-hmm.
And look what it did.
It turned out.
And I forgot the other episode.
Great for me,
but right. And it turned out great.
Yeah.
Oh, how to attract opportunity?
Yeah. Yes.
And remember one of the things you said: do what you do. People are watching you. You can't make people. People are always. You just keep doing what you
do. Do what you do.
And we said, let people know what it is you do. Mm-hmm. But then you just keep doing the best at it, and it'll find you. We just did those two
episodes.
You've
known that. I actually showed you this was why. So back in the live
world. Oh, about the tracking?
Well, no. Yeah, about how you stopped doing stuff. So when I was younger, before the Earth, Wind, and Fire thing, that's how that happened.
I used to do their shows.
I stopped A2-ing. Mm. I stopped assisting. I just stopped. I was, I'm not doing this. I'm a live mix engineer. That's what I am.
Because you wanted to be seen.
I did.
Yeah.
And literally, 4 months after I stopped assisting, Earth, Wind, and Fire happened. And
the way that story happened didn't paint it as clearly in my brain.
And to say this for the young people listening and people listening for the come up story, understand that it's perspective here and it's tenure and there's knowing when you can make that switch and knowing when it's appropriate to do certain things.
Because you can definitely burn yourself.
Don't take the story and go,
I'm a mix
Bradford
now.
Said, yeah. I got to stop recording so I can mix. You also got to be good at mixing.
Oh, not that.
Yeah. Because here's the thing.
Yes.
Madonna was the one that made the distinction that she wanted me.
I didn't
try to manipulate into mixing. She said, when you sent those rough mixes, they were harder. They were punchier. When I hear that Don't Take It Personal mix, it was raw and rugged. That's what I want.
See, and so, I engineers
you got to let people tell you when you
so
dope. Don't think you dope and then you really are.
I know so many engineers that are jumping and say, oh, I'm mixing now. And I've been with you tracking. And you cool.
Like you cool. You mix in when people come calling for you to mix. Yeah, that's when you mix.
There's a whole mixer now. And then some people are like, well, I'm doing master now. I was like, I've heard your mixes.
Yeah.
There has to be
some momentum. And this is the important part to it is when I made the decision to stop tracking, there was momentum on the mix side. Right. There were people calling going, I need you to mix
this.
You
didn't track and then try to mix this. Yeah. Started.
It was an organic transition.
It was, I want you to mix this, and I want you to mix this. And then me going, you know what? Oh, okay, I can do this mix thing. Now I need to stop tracking.
Thank you so much.
So there's perspective there. There's nuance there. Don't just think it's, you know, but that was a huge, huge moment in my career.
Because
then she flew me out to L.A. I'm mixing song. I ended up mixing The Power of Goodbye. I ended up mixing all kind of stuff. But then Deborah Cox saw me mixing. Deborah Cox came by the studio, and then I get to mix Sentimental, and then other, you know, so it's all these relationships that started. You know, KP was out there at the time, and you know, so and KP, me and KP's relationship always went, you know, way back. But it's one of those things when people see you and they go, oh, Leslie's in here with Madonna. Oh, let's get Leslie to mix so and so and so and so and so and so, because it just reinforces their thinking.
Snowballs. Yeah, it definitely snowballs.
And for those, and unfortunately, I have found myself in this boat. I didn't really do a lot of it at the same time, but those that are so proud that they do everything, it makes it hard for anyone to define you.
Right.
Like, you the artist, but the, well, artist, producer, that's different, but you the artist, but you the manager too, and you the, oh, I also sell real estate. Oh, and I do this. Like, I get making a living and paying your bills and all that, but...
And what I always tell people, with the "I do everything" mentality is, a lot of us creatively have the bandwidth to do a lot of things.
Right.
But... do you do any of those things really well?
Really well.
That's the thing. Yes. And it's going back to the statement I made, like, yeah, you're going to start mixing now, but are you good? Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be honest with yourself, too, and let people tell you and let the world tell you how good you are.
Right.
And then you kind of, you know, but I do think people have the bandwidth to do more than one thing. They just got to be honest with the path. You can't cheat the game. You can't cheat time. You can't cheat learning. Mm-hmm. All that stuff still has to.
And my point is, it's not that you can't even be good, but then you can't get frustrated when people don't really know how to see you, though.
Right.
Like, all right, well are you a real estate agent, or are you a masseuse, or are you a
songwriter? Well, I mean, it goes back to when someone was getting those calls and they were saying, hey, this is going to be a tough mix. Don't take it personal. Like, just don't take it personal.
Absolutely.
You kind of got to take it.
One of my the best books I ever read in life is The Four Agreements. And one of the agreements is do not take it personal. I mean, one of the best books I ever read in life is the Bible. But we ain't going to go there.
It's not a bad one.
Oh, we go there all day. Okay. He'll tell you.
It's not a bad one.
All right, so I have two more I want to ask him, and then I'm good. And then
Good. Did you got me in here with a mixing icon?
I know.
Start fangirling in a minute.
All right, yeah, so COVID hit everybody.
Okay.
I need to know how COVID affected you.
Built a studio in a truck. What you mean?
So COVID.
I saw that.
COVID was a very interesting process for me. And it actually also ties into you and I's story of me being here, me leaving here. Okay. All of it ties in.
Okay.
So
at Icon, he's talking
about. Yeah, at Icon Studios. This used to be my home. My home base.
Good times.
So here's the thing. What COVID did, I'll start with the COVID portion, and I'll work my way back to that part. So when COVID hit, had to be home with the babies, my 9 and 12-year-old, who are soon to be 10 and 13, and my wife. And my wife was kind of comfortable working from home because she's a marriage and family therapist, but she does Zoom, and then Zoom took off, so all her sessions are on Zoom now. Yeah. She loves it. And so we all were working from home, and the girls are in their room doing, you know, school via Zoom, and then she's working in her room. And then I'm like, you know, the first record I get sent in the pandemic, the very first record I mixed when the quarantine started was on What's Poppin'. I had to finish that What's Poppin' mix, and I had to finish the remix. So I was like, okay, let me see how I can kind of finagle this. So I mixed What's Poppin' in the house, like a little bit, most of it, right? Then I get this record from Daryl Jones from Atlantic, Cardi B, WAP. And we all know what WAP stands
for. Sure we do. Let's move on.
I'm sorry, what?
So,
for clarification.
So I'm like, I can't mix this record in the house because I got two
girls.
Because
you got ladies.
This is true.
So I'm like, can't mix this on headphones. I called Cannon. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to go to the studio. So anybody else be up there? Because I'm going to go up there and just do my thing. He was like, no, it don't matter to me. And then I was like, it's COVID. I need to be home with the babies. I need to be home with everybody. So I was like, you know what? Bing. Let me set up in the car and see if I can get this mix done in the car. Now, there was reasons for that, which is, A, wasn't using the car for anything else. We weren't taking nobody nowhere. It was so I backed it out the garage, put my stuff in there, and I started going, you know.
This is a truck?
My Cadillac Escalade. Okay. And what I said to myself was, we always go to the car to reference mixes. Mm-hmm. Cars are actually just inherently built for sound. Their whole design is based on keeping out road noise, sound not bouncing around in their car environment. Is amazingly comfortable to me because sound just does not bounce around in a car. So I was like, oh, let me see if I can make this work. And then the added bonus is I'm in the car. They can't hear what I'm working on.
Right.
It got comfortable, and I was like, ew, this is my little COVID office. I like this. I'm in the car. I can mix whatever I want. I'm taking calls in here. I'm doing it. You know, so I was mixing in my truck for the first part of the quarantine.
It looked sweet, too.
Yeah, it was nice little setup. It was fun. So, obviously, things progressed. The girls start going back to school, and I can't mix in the truck because then I got to take stuff out, take them to school, da-da-da. So then I moved into the house, and got a little room in the house where my room is downstairs on this side. Doris's room is upstairs on that side. So I don't really bother her with the noise factor. Treated it, did some things, put up some soundproof curtains, all kind of stuff. And really got a good sound and feel for the room. And just started mixing at home. And what I found is I really like working at home. And I would have never been able to tell you that in a million years before COVID. But what I like about it is not even the obvious things, which is, you know, working from home, I ain't got to worry about studio costs or whatever. But that's what it was is I'm around my family so much. I'm around the girls a lot. I'm around Doris a lot. It was actually really good for our family because me and Doris really got to address a lot of the marital things in our marriage that weren't great when we had a lot of proximity. Mm-hmm. And we worked out and we became friends during COVID. And so being able to work in that environment and figuring all that out was amazing. Then I started realizing I actually kind of like this because what being at home also forced me to realize is how much time I wasted at the studio. So in the studio, everybody speaks my language. I can have 50 conversations about kick drums, audio, X, Y, and Z. At home, they don't care nothing about what I do.
Right.
So I don't have any conversations about work. So I get the work done and then we watch an Encanto. Mm-hmm. Or I get the work done and we watching, you know, whatever movie at the time. So it put me on a schedule because now that they're going back to school, I have a certain window that I can make noise in the house. Mm-hmm. And then when they come home for doing homework and everything, I kind of shut it down. And then when they all go to bed, I do all like edits or printing or anything that I do that doesn't require things being loud.
Right.
And it put me in a pattern.
Okay.
And I start getting so much more efficient, so much more good. Now, here's the part that ties into our story. So being here at Icon, what I realized at the time and the transition I was making in my career was it is for where I was personally, where I'm mixing, but I want to teach. I'm traveling a lot to do stuff. I wasn't the perfect person to be in this kind of studio environment because your studio is based on, it's the studio and it's generating income.
Right.
And I fell short in that area as far as being able to always generate a ton of income, what we dreamed of together. We were like, oh, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
But then my life took a turn. I started traveling a lot and going to Full Sail and not working a lot in the studio. And then when I do come in, I ain't really got nothing to do, but I kind of still like being in the studio environment. So that, but that also put a strain on, well, I can't be in there when I'm not working because I got to generate money. Mm-hmm. So that started not working for either one of us, not just for me, but for you as well. And I think I started realizing at that point in my career, that's not the thing that I needed.
Right.
So when I left here, immediately, it's funny how God works things out. So, and I knew it was going to be okay, simply because I was never mad at you. Right. I was never mad at Tasha. I was never mad at any of the situation. I was like, I need a place to work. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? Because a better opportunity came for y'all in that room, and that made sense. So immediately, the following day, Cannon calls me and goes, hey, man, I was just thinking, man, we know each other for like 20-something years. You know, I know you're over there at Icon, but, you know, I want you around, bro. Like, just your presence, your mind, where you be teaching these young engineers? He, you know, the, and I'm sitting there going, this bro don't even know. Like, I need a studio to work in right now. Like, right. This is great. So then we talked, and I told him the situation over here. He was like, man, come over here and get you some keys, and you can pick a room and work in that room. Because what I realized is the setup they have at Generation Now, shout out to Cannon, Drama Lake, all those guys, is the studio isn't what they want the studio to generate money.
Right.
The studio is only there to facilitate their artists.
Sure.
Their artist, the label, is what they are focused on generating money.
Yep.
So the studio is just a byproduct to assist in that.
Right.
And that's the setup. Too.
Yeah.
That's the setup I needed.
Yep.
Because it's pressure off of me to have to always pay every month this thing or meet this demand of trying to make this profitable for Stone and Tasha and da da da. That started to wear on me, and then, you know, things went a little weird with, you know, other partners involved and da da da. And it was like, yo, I need a situation where the studio isn't the thing generating the wanting to generate the money. And so it worked out so perfectly being over there, because they didn't care about any studio. They just want me there. And oh, by the way, can you mix all our hours? Absolutely. So it's Jack Harlow and Uzi and Killa and, you know, all the stuff that we're working on. And they just love having me over there because they know I'm helping trying to teach the engineers and da da da.
Right.
So that worked out great. But the larger point I was making is I learned that the way I work isn't conducive to generating income for the studio.
Sure.
And that even now translates to me working at home. Mm-hmm. Like, I still have this, you know, spot over at Generation Now. I'm still, you know, relationship, the whole nine. But I work mostly at home now. And that I think that's the main thing I gathered professionally from COVID, is understanding how something I would have thought I could never do, which is work from home, is actually the best thing for me.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it, because it put me on a schedule. I get more work done. I get way more time with my family. Mm-hmm. Takes the financial pressure off of trying to generate income for myself and the facility. That part is gone, and that was a huge weight on me. And I wanted this to work out so bad because of how we dreamed it up.
As you're talking, first of all, what's so full disclosure to all y'all. So some of this is I'm just now hearing as far as the details.
Uh-huh.
But also know that even in friendships, there's business.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And you just have to navigate them right? So some of this I'm hearing for details, but as you're talking, and then correct me if I'm wrong, and if I need to cut this out, I'll cut it out too. But in hearing all of that, because I'm like, dang, man, all you had to do was tell me that, I would have understood. But I was like, maybe I don't think he wanted to let Tosh down. I don't think he wanted to. Because we.
Both of y'all.
Both of us. But Tosh really, because Tosh was a Leslie Brathwaite pom-pom. Like, she used to handle a lot of his admin stuff or business stuff. Mm-hmm. She just loved. But she did. And if you know Tosh, y'all know this, when she sets her sights on stuff, she had this whole, this is what we can be.
Absolutely. You know what
I
mean? Yeah.
And so
I absolutely felt like I let her down for sure.
Yeah.
You. And it just. But again, the one thing I'm always proud of is just in general, us as adults, we're able to navigate the business.
Oh, sure. Friendship. Yeah, because I've reached out to you a few times afterwards. You're like, hey, man.
Yeah, we good. So, but it was a real huge burden on me. And
knowing
even,
that, I can see how that would be. Like,
not
I,
even just
I totally get it. Yeah.
Patchwork at Boo Studio, it was the same thing where I was like, man, I got to generate income for myself, but I also got to figure out how to make this profitable for the studio. And sometimes it just don't work like that, because sometimes I don't mix. So, but then the other phase of my career that I've morphed into now since COVID too is I raised my rates and I'm only dealing with certain clients, and it's worked out amazing.
Yeah, because there was a while there where you were kind of taking whatever client came in. I mean, you didn't go low, but
I was trying not to miss. Like, and
yeah, I'm working. I did 10, but all 10 of them equal one Cardi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it was tough.
And then
what was really, and we really going into it.
Y'all want some inside, stuff now, for real.
What was really messing with me too is, so I would take the clients of, okay, well, I only got this much, and like, cool. And then I write Stone a little check. And then I'm off in London mixing Beyonce, and I'm like, oh, no, I wish I could have mixed that there, because that would have been great for Stone and them. And that, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, those things happen, I would have loved to mix something. I remember telling Pharrell I had to mix some of the Despicable Me was it two or three? One of the movies. I remember telling him I had to make some of them here because I need to. Right. I remember saying to him, I need to maintain my relationship with these people. You got to let me make some of them here. Remember, remember right. when I mixed a couple records?
I do remember. I do remember that.
I begged him for that because I was like, he wanted me to come to L.A. And I ended up going to L.A. to do some the NERD stuff. And I was like, but bro, if I come to do the NERD stuff, you got to let me do Despicable Me here because I got to make this profitable for the studio. They've been super nice to me. They've been letting me, you know, float around here. Da, da, da. So that's the part that always kind of tugged at me like, man,
so
I wish.
So many gems and nuggets.
Yeah.
And but
it's not even just that. So as someone, I was here for a lot of this. Uh-huh. And I'm an engineer and a manager. So I'm overseeing interns, and that's like my headache here. And this is going on.
Right.
And again, as a budding engineer on this side, I only saw you as the Titan. There were no problems. There were no issues. There were none of this relationship right. stuff. So I'm literally finding out all of this stuff. And I mean, I know this stuff goes on, but as someone who was this close to it and didn't even know,
to speak to that, like we just said, there was never an issue that we got to a place where it was ugly or feeling bad.
Yeah. Right.
Stone has always been able to come to me as a man and be like, hey, bro, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, what's
hey,
up, bro, what's up?
Yeah. What's going on with this? And I've seen how he dealt with people, his interns, his employees. He'd be like, come on, y'all. Y'all not cleaning up enough. That shooting straight.
Yeah, you took it a lot better than they do.
But I see that's other studio managers will walk around complaining like that, and not even directly talk to their people. I've seen that.
Right.
I've seen people not deal with it the way you deal with it, where you would just be like, come on, y'all. Y'all got to take care of this like it's X, Y, and Z. You'll even break down, you know, come on. Like, we're all trying to be in this. Da, da, da. You'll have talks. I've seen you have talks. I've seen you have meetings and all kind of – you didn't had – things where you done brought in lunch and sat down and tried to be nice to everybody and really get them to buy into the family of it.
I've seen all of that.
I've seen all of it. So I know who you are as that person. And that is the thing that I think keeps the BS out. When
Absolutely.
You can deal with people directly, you can say, hey, I'm not pleased with the way y'all don't wipe the top of the soda machine off. Y'all gonna just leave all that dust up there? And that's something that a lot of studio managers can't even tell their people.
Yep. You know, darn like, well I'm making a clip out of this one. So life lesson I learned out of this one, for myself, and I think for you guys, when you have relationships like that, because when business gets involved in personal relationship, trust me, it can get sketchy. Communicate. You know what I mean? Communicate. And I know in his... not saying everything was at least for a good purpose. That is, look, I didn't want to let my friends down. I know what we did. I'm not going to be able to hold it up. So for that reason, I get it, you know, but we always told each other, you can come to me about anything. And I mean that, you know what I mean? So I would have understood.
I was so like the three big projects that I had while I was here, which was the Beyonce project, the NERD album and Cardi B. Those were three albums I mixed
here.
During my tenure here.
Yeah.
I remember when we snuck Cardi in.
But I went out of town I had to go out of town to do most of the Cardi because they wanted to work in Miami.
But it's all understandable.
I'm saying that to say, it's funny because I remember thinking about, I think I even told Lawrence one time, I was like, man, Tasha's going to kill me. Like, I was like, oh.
Tasha be having these people scared. I'm telling you, she might have to get that name T-Bully back. Like, for real. Like, because she be having people scared. But it also lessened to me too and everyone else is that there's the backstory.
Yeah.
Like always give the benefit of the doubt that there's a backstory.
Yeah. And you know, and I wanted to say this too. You know what made me feel real good about the London thing? You remember when I got back and you came in there and you were asking me all these questions and you were super excited to hear the stories? I was like, okay, at least Stone doesn't want to kill me.
Stone don't hold grudges. And everyone knows that. That's where she and
that,
I are. We're dichotomy.
That conversation, I will tell you, made me feel so good that day because I was like, okay, at least Stone was excited to at least hear about it. And then you and I also have connections that we ain't going to talk about on the podcast.
Right,
but we talk about our family
similarities,
stuff and our marriage stuff. And so I knew that bond was always there regardless.
I liked you, Leslie. But I liked you.
Yeah,
period.
But I was scared. I was like, damn, Tasha. Man, she ain't gonna want
to
mess with
but
me.
If y'all
I'm
ever came to like
clients,
if y'all ever came like the lock in or anything like that, you honestly have Leslie to think about that. Like, you know, business is business, so I have a tenant back there, whatever, but not quite as accommodating as Leslie was. So Leslie was like, oh no, you can do what you need to do.
Just, we're in A room all the time.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm gonna be mixing so long as I'm not too loud. I said, cool. We had our life meetings back there, we had our lock in seminars,
yeah.
I did my boys and girls club stuff. Because he was like, I'm not using this space, you can use it. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of that got shut down because you left.
You're right.
And I couldn't do that anymore.
I think our whole studio partnership relationship would have worked out amazingly.
If you didn't have that pressure on you.
If the studio wasn't what you guys were using to generate the income,
now,
if it wasn't the...
I got to have your back.
Okay.
Because you, and we going to leave it, because that weight wasn't supposed to be on you, if you... Think about it. Think of everyone involved.
Yeah.
So to your credit,
yeah.
That weight was, now we gonna say yeah. Well-known male artist.
Wuma.
So to Wuma. Your credit, that wasn't the original plan. So absolutely. That weight originally wasn't even supposed to be on you
totally
in
me.
The first
absolutely.
Place.
Now this so, I do feel like I'm in on because I do know that story.
Yeah. So
yeah, but
before I let you get out of here, Les, I have to, we talked about this offline before we actually kicked off. I need this to be on record because
okay.
I've been living with this for like 6 years now internally.
Okay.
So there was a time when we were in the B room
mm-hmm.
and me and Jay, who used to be head engineer
O'Brien?
Here. Yeah. We were I don't know what we were messing around with, but you came in and there was something you were working on. And I think it was one of the big, I don't know if it was Cardi at the time or if it was, I think Missy was coming in and out at the point too. And it was something that you didn't know how to do. And I did. So I showed you how to do it.
Yes.
All I want you to do
is tell the people what it is.
Tell the people what it is, and then just tell me what you so, used that on. Just, you know,
so,
you deserve it. You deserve
I need,
it. Jay.
I need this.
You
for
deserve
me.
It. Jay. So it was the auto-tune. I worked with auto-tune a lot on so many songs. Some would even say I'm partly responsible for the auto-tune era because I mixed T-Pain's first records. Singles, the whole nine, and you know, but that's a whole nother conversation. I wouldn't say that.
We're gonna do a part four.
There's a running joke with all the engineers in our little engineers group, and they always blame me for the autotune. But I didn't know about graph mode and about all the different intricacies you can do in autotune, and you can almost kind of freak it like Melodyne in yeah. certain respects. And you were the first one to show me that, and I was like, this changed my life. And I've used it, I actually used it. I think on Cardi, I know for a fact I used it on...
You heard it here first. Johnny got his Grammy. Oh. Johnny got his
Grammy. Johnny has his credits. Oh. He goes like, boom, boom, boom. Then parentheses, he goes like, Cardi B, kind of, sort of.
Right. I used it on Wayne. I used it on Drake. I used it on quite a couple things. I used it on Drake a lot because he's always saying he wants to have that sound. Like, like I mixed the Brent Fires record with him and a couple other records. And I remember using that particular mode because he wants it to be dialed in and not sound like Wayne and them. And yeah,
that's all I needed, man. That was it.
I definitely use it. I give you your props.
Not just for the self-serving aspect, but I actually want to point out how you were in that moment, because this humbled me. Because again, like I said, I was seeing you as a titan.
And I was gonna say the real point of that whole moment was to let people know that no matter what level you're on, it's always about learning. I learned too much, actually, from people who are on the come up or would be considered younger than me in their walk or their tenure in the career. I learned so much from the young
cats. I can say this honestly. Not one time. So we were in there for 45 minutes, an hour maybe. Not one time did you say, oh, yeah. Like you knew it, but we were being like, no. He was like, yo, I didn't know.
I tell people all the time.
And then he started asking questions. And I was like, yo.
I tell people all the time, usually when I'm in a room with a younger engineer, that younger engineer is usually smarter than me. I may have more tenure and more experience, and I may have a lot more knowledge on how to navigate certain situations. But as far as technical knowledge, you guys are usually smarter than us because you're learning it fresh.
Yeah.
I go to Full Sail all the time, and these kids are learning about stuff that with new stuff and teaching me stuff. I learn so much from younger cats all the time. That's nice. That's never been an issue. Like, always willing to learn. Teach me all of it.
Well, man, this is one of my favorites, hands down. You know, Simone Torres still a great one too. I loved hers, Cliff's, but this is definitely one of them. Robofat, that's what I meant to ask, and we're done.
Okay.
Atmos, do you like it or not?
Dolby
Atmos. What do you think?
Here's the thing. I think it's a great technology. I don't necessarily love it for hip hop driven music. Mm. I think that it requires too much of the user. I think that it, and it also kind of diminishes the mixes to where they don't sound as full and rich. They sound a little too spacey.
So good for TV and film.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Amazing for TV, film, gaming, all of that. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think it will translate.
I think once you get out of the stereo space, you start getting to your 517. Yeah, and it's great for that.
And if music were driven by different qualities, if music were more classically driven on a whole, we'd be having a different conversation. But music, pop culture, everything is mostly hip hop driven, especially like
until that one huge hip hop artist mixes his album in Dolby Atmos,
and then it's
and now all of a sudden we like now we have this new quote unquote sound.
Yeah,
but you're like I'm good and all that stuff. Yo, man, where can people find you? Yo, where can they find you on social media?
Well, I'm usually on my Twitch channel every night playing Call of Duty. But what I do, here's the thing: I found a way to make that productive, and I did this during COVID.
Because Lord knows what I do, played that all.
I get on there every night. I play Call of Duty, but I take questions from the chat. So it's a lot of Full Sail students on there. It's a lot of young engineers that have questions about this EQ. Like last night we were talking about the God Particle, Jason Joshua's new plugin, and we were talking about how to use it, what's the best settings, da da da. We were talking about all that on there last night.
Why are you playing Call of Duty?
Yeah, and then sometimes we talk about cultural things. We had to touch on what happened in Texas last night. That's heartbreaking as a parent. Steve Kerr had the best energy I've seen about it. So on my Twitch channel, I'm on there playing games all the time, but we're talking about all kind of stuff. And the point of it is to give people a forum to ask me questions about audio, life. I'll be on there giving financial advice when I can. Like,
don't go to jail now.
So what's your Twitch too crazy channel?
it's Lester Budd is the channel. You just go on Twitch and look for Lester Budd.
I think that's you everywhere. Right?
Isn't that you everywhere?
That's me everywhere. Lester Budd.
Just put in Lester
Budd. I got
that
nickname from Jackie at DARP Studios. She was the receptionist there. Okay. And she said I look like Bud from the Cosby Show. So she would always call me. She would always be like,
hilarious.
She would always be like, Bud, when I walked in. And when she would page me, when I get a phone call, she'd be like, Lester Bud, you have a call. And then that name just stuck. It stuck. Yeah. So Lester Bud.
All right,
Bud.
So Lester Bud. That's where it is. Jay.
Just Johnny Vaughn, JustJohnnyVan, everywhere. Simple. Hey,
y'all know about me, man. Twitch.
Duh.
I'm not on Twitch. But Twitter.
Twitter.
Stone 007. That's 007. And on Instagram, it is the letter O. Stone, letter O, letter O, 7. And always go to lifeonpodcast.com. That's where you can check out the videos. You can listen to the latest episodes. You can binge. But most importantly, man, like, share, tell your friends. Y'all got us at 7,500 right now. We appreciate you. We love you. And we're going to keep on climbing. We love y'all. We are out.
Peace.